In a world where the weather has gone increasingly wonky, isn't it really reassuring how once the junior and the leaving certs start to wind down, you are absolutely guaranteed that the rain will start? Cats and dogs here this morning, and I look at the weather forecast, it seems to be the same across the country for the day. It is a damp one. It is the middle of June. Do not adjust your sets. 3 years ago, the government of the day set a climate change target for agriculture. 2 weeks ago, the latest set of emissions figures showed that if business continued as usual, that not only would that agriculture target not be met, but that emissions could actually increase. This is a bit of a head-scratcher now, folks, because unlike most other sectors of the economy, agriculture has all of the tools that it needs to meet those targets, but yet it is badly adrift. So our big question this morning, why are the tools still sitting on the shelf? Why, if we know how to reduce farming emissions to avoid billions and billions in fines, aren't we pressing all of those tools into service now? Cavan dairy farmer Thomas Duffy is a man who likes to measure things, and he has run his slide rule over all of these methane reducing technologies. How much will they cost? How much can he afford on his own? How much will they reduce his farm's emissions? I visited him on Wednesday to see what was possible.
So what are we walking on?
A newly reseeded multi-species sward. So we've got chicory, plantain, clover, red clover.
And the clover has a greenhouse gas reduction benefit.
Yeah, a massive one. The entire farm at this stage is quite high in clover. We kind of rank between 20 and 40% clover at different times of the year. Basically allowed us to reduce our nitrogen fertiliser quite significantly on the grazing platform. And then combined with the other elements, we've probably been able to cut about 7 to 8% of our total emissions between the switch of protected urea and then on top of that, reducing our total nitrogen.
That's a pretty massive chunk of change, isn't it? 8%.
Yeah, it can be challenging sometimes because weed control is quite difficult as well in it. But these are kind of more practical challenges, like the saving and even the time saving and the diesel saving and all the rest of it has been huge.
There are feed additives with impressive methane cutting results already widely available, but the snag for Irish farmers is they can't be fed to animals grazing outdoors. Obviously, at this time of year, the vast majority of your animals are out for the vast majority of the time, but there are significant portions of the year that they will be in that you could be feeding these new additives to them.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, we have probably 3 months of full-time winter here, and then either side of that, there's another 3 months at least where we're buffer feeding, if not a little bit more. And so that is the time that we already know the likes of tree knot, Asparagopsis, could be integrated into the feed.
These are methane-reducing additives in the feed. What's the cost to you? How much will it reduce the gases by?
So this is kind of the challenge. We don't know as farmers exactly how much some of these are going to cost. We've heard figures of about 80 euros per cow per year for feeding through a TMR diet, a mixed ration. We could be talking about 40 euros per cow for feeding that. The actual impact on our total methane, though, our total emissions on the farm, would be about 3%.
But in order to persuade farmers to take that up at scale, because there's no benefit to their bottom line, they would have to be incentivized to do that.
Yeah, the consumer has to say, yeah, we absolutely want this. And then our processors have to make that available through some form. The reality is this is 100% a common good. There's no advantage to me. So if the market doesn't return it, what do I do?
It's notable that you got a number of different breeds in this field here. How important is the genetics piece in reducing the gases?
It's one of the slower abatement options. It's one of the more permanent. Once you improve the genetics like that, you reduce the body size, you reduce down or increase the milk solids per cow. I mean, we'd say probably somewhere around 6% emissions reductions has been gotten purely from improved genetics.
It's the smaller part of your whole methane budget, but how much slurry is stored underneath our feet here in the shed?
So there's about 800 tonnes produced. Most of that's produced over the winter, but when the cows are coming in to be milked, they obviously also dung. So it's kind of produced throughout the entire year.
Now, you could choose to add acid to that and reduce by, is it up to 95% or something like that?
The latest figures from Chagas show about 95% methane reduction.
How much of a cost is adding that acid to you?
So there's kind of two parts to it. The first one is that it will probably cost somewhere between 10 and 20,000. Very hard to get figures, but probably closer to 20,000 for the actual acidification technology to be installed on the farm.
That's a once-off cost.
That's a once-off cost, yeah. And then about 1,000 euros probably in acid every year.
For how much of a gas reduction?
Somewhere around 9%. It could be up on that for slurry acidification to cut the total emissions. So that's the equivalent in CO2. Okay.
Again, not to be sniffed at, no pun intended.
No, not at all.
We spend the morning bouncing from field to shed and back again, looking at the possibility of methane sniffers to detect the gassier cows, sexed semen and IVF to further perfect the breeding of less gaseous cows, all real-world tech, all being used at scale in other countries, but not here. Then, back to Thomas's kitchen, kettle on, calculator out, and remember, 25% of an emissions cut is what agriculture needs to achieve by 2030.
I mean, the total emissions reduction we could probably reach is about 33% between what we've already done and what we could do. But the problem is most of what we could do requires a very big infrastructure investment or ongoing costs that don't return anything.
There will be people listening to this who would ask themselves the question, but Thomas, this is your business that is doing the polluting. Why should I, the taxpayer, have to help you sort that out?
Yeah, look, it's a fair enough question. The reality of the matter is if we go down the line of saying, OK, every farmer has to do this, you're going to drive farms like mine out of business. Realistically, the only ones that could probably swallow some of these costs would be 400, 500 cows more. So you're basically doing away with family farming. So instead, we need to talk about just transition. There needs to be support for people when there's no return for them.
And on this list, we have identified those that are of a benefit to you and your quite happy to put your hand in your pocket. There's only a small number of them that would be of no benefit to you whatsoever and therefore would require a little bit more support.
Yeah, realistically, things like methane sniffers and feed additives, if the market doesn't return for us, then there's no real way for us to finance them. Other things, we have no problem, you know, we'll service the costs, we'll put in our own labour, our own chyme, our own rebuilding. Some things are cost neutral, but most of those low-hanging fruit, a lot of farmers have taken them up, so they're asking where to now.
Thomas Duffy in Cavan, and that is quite instructive, isn't it? 25% cuts what is needed, but 33% is what he could achieve. So why aren't we doing better? Why has a multi-billion euro export industry generating enormous profits, salaries and dividends not used the tools at its disposal yet to make itself properly sustainable? And let's be clear here, it's not farmers who are in the dock on this. It is the policymakers, the captains of industry who get to set market conditions and design the business model who need to explain what is going to happen next in response to these EPA figures. So I am joined in studio by three key stakeholders to talk further about this. First up, Carl Richards, the head of the climate unit in the state's agricultural research agency, Chagas. Good morning, Carl. Thanks very much for coming in. You call all of these greenhouse gas reductions tools the MAC curve. How representative is Thomas Duffy's farm?
Thomas would be, I'd say, in the top 10% of all dairy farmers. He's really up there. You know, he's a very well-educated farmer. He's involved in a huge amount of discussion groups. So he's really at the forefront of what he's doing. You know, I'd say, you know, in some of what he's doing is probably even top 5% in terms of his nitrogen fertilizer reductions.
But that 33%, that's not just a paper exercise. That's a real world exercise, in your opinion.
Exactly. And like, I think he's probably maybe underselling himself slightly in that the emissions on the nitrogen side, he's already done is about 16.5%. So we actually met with Thomas yesterday and did his AgNav numbers, which is the, I suppose, the carbon intensity of his farm. And we've actually run those calculations and backcast it. So he's already reduced emissions by about 16.5% on his farm, just on the nitrogen side. But as he mentioned, there are newer measures, newer technical options coming out, such as manure additives or such as animal feed additives, which are there or thereabouts in terms of their science.
But well, I was just going to say, how ready to go are they?
So manure additives are ready to go. The science is clear. The research is on the EPA's desk for inclusion in the national inventory. In terms of the feed additives, we're still a couple of years away in terms of having something for grazing animals. But for when the animals are in over the winter time, the science is there. The 3-NOP additive is registered and it works. And there are other additives.
So that is ready, waiting on the shelf to be taken down and pressed into service if the incentives are right.
And it's already been demonstrated for the last 2 years on the Signpost Farms programme, the joint industry and Chagas demonstration farms. On about 25 of those dairy farms demonstrated the use of feed additives there in the last 2 winters.
Do you think the distinction that Thomas is making is a fair one between those tools which are a benefit to him and to his farm and to the public in terms of reduced emissions, and then there are ones which are only a public good, no benefit to him, so he's going to require some financial assistance?
He's 100% correct in that, but I would go a bit further than Thomas. The ones that are either cost neutral or have a very low cost, they also need significant support, be that knowledge transfer. So like Thomas is a university educated dairy farmer. You know, when we start to look at the average dairy farmer, they need somebody beside them there to give them the confidence to use these tools, even if they save money.
Okay, fair enough. But the bottom line here is there is no excuse for going backwards, as the EPA says that we are right now.
So the part of the reason for going backwards is the increase in production that we keep seeing. So on the dairy side, dairy cow numbers have been increasing for the last 10 years. So, but what at the same time we see is the increase in the adoption of these technologies isn't fast enough to basically account for that increase in emissions from the increased herd.
Let me move on. When the government set the target of 25% cuts for farming, it commissioned feasibility reports to show how that could be done. Professor of Agri-Food Business in UCC, Tia Hennessy, chaired one of those groups. She joins us on the line now. Good morning, Tia.
Good morning, Philip.
If we had started doing what you suggested in your report when you suggested it 2 years ago, would we be in a better position than we are now?
I think we would be. We did that work in 2022. We had a multi-stakeholder group. Thomas Duffy was a member of that then. So delighted to see the progress he has made. We called out 9 actions. 7 of them are ones that Thomas has discussed, which are practices that can be adopted, including the feed additives. Okay. And then we had 2 more controversial measures, which was a voluntary diversification and a voluntary extensification scheme, which was about reducing animal numbers.
And so of the 7 that don't involve reducing cow numbers, how many still sit unused 2 years later?
Well, I mean, they included feed additives, so we've seen that the uptake of that has been very low. They included earlier age of slaughter up to 2022. We had been seeing really good progress with that, but unfortunately, because of production conditions and input costs, the progress there has really stalled. We have seen some improvement on the use of protected urea, but we're still not at the rate that we were recommending at that stage, which was a 90% replacement rate for can. So there's been varying levels of progress. But again, it comes back to the point that both Thomas and Carl have made. Without some proper market or regulatory framework that will support and encourage farmers to do this, they're really just doing it from their own motivation at
What's
the moment.
What's your sense of why that hasn't happened? Because the creameries need every last drop of milk they can get going through their gates. The factories need every last ounce of meat that they can get going through their gates as well. Why would they run the risk of seeing animal numbers reduced if we don't deploy all of these technologies?
I think there's a whole range of factors. I think business, like farmers, are not seeing the premium at the other end of the supply chain. So as consumers, are we willing to pay for this? So I was working with KPMG recently and they've done a retail tracker of consumers in Ireland, 1,000 consumers, and they were asked these questions. And the most important factors that all of us relate to when buying food is price, quality and convenience. The sustainability credentials come very far down on the list. And actually, over the last 3 years, price has become more and more important during the cost of living crisis. So I would say that these businesses are probably not seeing consumers willing to pay the price premium. And then therefore, the other option for them is to absorb that in their own margins, or unless they're coming under pressure from their shareholders, which is also another driving factor, to reduce carbon emissions. Again, just like the farmers, there isn't the framework there at the moment to shift that dial.
Stay with us, Thea. I asked for one of the CEOs of the dairy processing industry to join us. They nominated Conor Mulvihill from Dairy Industry Ireland in IBEC, who is here in studio. Good morning to you, Conor.
Good morning.
The EPA figures show what they show, and they show that whatever it was that was being done until now to reduce emissions isn't enough. So how is the industry going to respond now?
Yeah, well, first thing I'd say is the EPA figures, most recent EPA figures that we have, our agriculture reduced by 4.6% and a transport went up. So we are delivering right now. The EPA figures,
they don't expect to replicate that next year with increased uptake of fertiliser.
Well, we'll have to see those figures. They're not out yet. All we can do is talk to the EPA figures that we have. And to be fair, as you say, the EPA figures and the projections are showing some difficulties. But agriculture is delivering now. Thomas's story is replicated in tens of thousands of farm families.
But not enough, Conor, and that is a threat not just to the environment but to your industry as well, because if it went around in the taxpayer's mind that these polluting industries are the reason that we're going to have to pay billions in fines after 2030, that's reputation ruining for you.
No, look, we have taking on the MAC curve in terms of, we have a roadmap that we have working on with Carol and his colleagues. We have national programs, we have local programs, we have the likes of the Signposts. Every single cooperative has their own local program.
Okay, and all of these unused tools sitting there waiting to be pressed into service.
Well, there's very little unused. Everything is being worked on. Everything is being worked through with knowledge transfer. Different farmers are adopting it at different rates. We are pressing our way through. We are putting plans in each and every co-op that is being done. We are deploying our own resources. Remember, these are cooperatives. This is farmers' own money that is being spent on these advisory.
Okay, there's a lot of money there, though. Tierlawn, 67 million operational profits 2024. Ornua, 130 million. Kerry Dairy, 39 million. And I could go on, but I won't. There's a lot of money here that could be diverted to rewarding emissions reduction rather than being spent on dividend checks.
Yeah, well, a lot of them are reinvested in R&D. We are in a global crisis. We have costs. Those businesses are going up. You're referring to a good year. Previous 2 years of those have been very, very difficult for those dairy industries and their cooperatives. Remember, every cent goes back to the farmer. These are farmer-owned businesses. There's no magic money tree here. Even the sustainability bonuses that we are paying out, and we're the only industry, Philip, that is paying extra to encourage sustainability action take up. And every cent is going back into those farmers to make sure we have businesses into the future.
That's the dairy industry response. What of the beef industry? Stay with us, though, please, folks. I want to come back to you. To date, the beef industry has concentrated mainly on improving genetics so that the cattle can be slaughtered at an earlier age. Less time on the farm means less emitting. It also means greater profitability. The industry's uptake of some of the other technologies has been less than impressive, though. Larry Goodman's ABP isn't a cooperative like the dairy processors. It's a private company with unknown wealth, but certainly running into the billions. It controls a third of the beef market, so could be potentially very influential in activating these tools to cut emissions. This week, they ran an event on their demo farm in Carlow to showcase their green credentials. I grabbed a word with ABP's sustainability manager, Stephen Connolly, at that event and asked him for a reaction to the EPA projections about how badly off target Ireland is.
Yes, so look, I think when you look at the figures in 2023, I think they were very positive. Yes, they're not as good in 2024, but I suppose you have to look at it is this is challenging. And you know, if it was easy, you know, it would be done by now. And it probably emphasised the need for the likes of this trial farm here. So And I think we have the tools available now to farmers that we didn't have a number of years ago. In time, all them tools is going to lead us to meeting our targets.
Yeah, in time, that's the real key question though here, isn't it? There is so much more that you could be doing now. There's so many more tools in the box available to you, but you're concentrating on this beef genetics piece, which is going to be of limited value in reducing emissions.
Look, everyone, this was entitled to their opinion, but again, the facts is, if we look at this trial farm here, you know, it's 32% lower than the national average. And it's not just genetics. Again, on the farm here, we're looking at, you know, how to reduce age at finish. So our animals here are 19 months, our heifers at finish, and our steers at 21, which is 180 days.
It's not a matter just of opinion, though, because that reduced slaughtering age will get you maybe up to 500,000 tonnes of reduced emissions. There's still 5.5 million tonnes that needs to be gotten. So you're really only trying to solve the smallest part of the problem, aren't you?
No, I don't. I don't think that's the case. So look, the finishing piece is something that we can, I suppose, have a bit more control of. I suppose the key thing is, how do we implement into more farms, more family farms? And like, our Advantage programme is doing that. So we've over 1,000 farmers involved in the programme. We're 35,000 animals. And on average, the animals are 85 days younger.
Would you not accept, though, that right now you could be incentivising your farmers to breed for low methane emissions, though? You're not.
I think over the next couple of years, we currently have a methane index, but I think there's going to be more data available. For here on the farm, we're actually measuring methane on our young calves right through to finish. So I think that index is going to become part of the industry, but it's just going to take a little bit more time.
Well, those emissions figures from the EPA, do they suggest to you that everything that we have been doing up until now is insufficient, therefore we need to do a huge amount more?
Look, I think we can always do more. Joe, I think you have to look at this more long term. I think we are in a really good place. I know for ourselves in ABP, we want to back this, we want to support it. But again, I think over the next 3 to 4 years, more of this technology is going to be adopted on farms.
But in 3 to 4 years' time, we're going to be an awful lot closer to as much as potentially €26 billion of fines. And your company will still be presumably turning a profit. We don't know how much because you don't tell us, but you're quite entitled to do that. But my point is, are you happy with a business model that will see the taxpayer picking up the bill for pollution from this industry while you continue to make extraordinary profits?
Look, I think today all we can talk about is all the work that we're doing here to help reduce the emissions and work together in collaboration with the industry to meet the targets. I think as a consumer, like as beef farmers and dairy farmers, there's a lot of work being done on farm. As farmers, we want to lower our emissions. Even you hear all the birds, biodiversity is hugely important. The water quality piece, we're going to do a lot of work on that. I have never seen us so joined together to try and reduce them emissions as much as possible.
That's pinning an awful lot of hopes, though, isn't it, on stuff that hasn't been invented, when there are things that you could be doing in the here and now that would avoid the taxpayer having to pick up that bill for your industry.
Look, I think you have to again go back to the data. We have one of the lowest carbon emissions of beef in the world. If you look at the animals here behind us, and look at them out grazing grass, look at the, you know, our suckler beef industry, the tillage, you know, if you go back to the data, we've one of the lowest carbon emissions.
Okay, but being lower than everybody else does not get us off the hook for the fines, and it does not make us clean, does it?
Look, obviously, it's back to, we will be doing more, and we want to do more. But I think if you just need a bit more time with the role of genetics, with the role of the multi-species swarms, we will get there.
And now that those emissions figures, in the words of the EPA, show that we're possibly going to begin moving backwards, will you be committing more resources to doing that?
We are. I think as a business, we are committed to doing everything we can to support our farmers in this area. And look, it's something, whether it be the trial farms, whether it be the Advantage programme, to help deliver them commitments. Because look, as a company, we have also got sustainability targets.
Will you put a number on the commitment, on the support that you're going to give the industry in this area?
Look, I can't put a number, to be honest with you. That'll take a lot more work than the back of a fag box. So look, we have committed a lot of money towards this, whether it be on, you know, on the farm level, but also on our factory level, so, and we'll continue to do that.
What I'm getting from you, though, is that those figures from 2 weeks ago, allied to the potential of 26 billion euros of fines, hasn't seen the alarm bells going off inside ABP and you beginning to ask yourselves the question, wow, what do we really have to do to move to a genuinely sustainable footing here?
I suppose you're probably saying, I suppose I'd point on that is, I think we are doing a really good job. Again, I'm sure, what answer do you want me to give? But we are doing a really good job.
Stephen Connolly from Larry Goodman's ABP Group. Thea Hennessy, am I oversimplifying all of this? Or is it as straightforward as the technology is there, industry just needs to use more of its profits to deploy it?
The technology is there. It involves a cost. The cost must be borne by somebody. You're suggesting that it's borne by industry. Yeah, that's fair enough. Industry might say they won't see the return on that because consumers won't pay that. So I think the other piece of the puzzle is the role of policymakers and of taxpayers as well as consumers. And I think we do need some progress on the policy framework to accelerate the pace of change, and that's both at the farm level, at the industry level, and at the consumer level.
Connor, it would take over 1 million cows removed from the national herd to do what the MAC curve can achieve. Which would you rather?
Well, when we're not taking down old houses, we're not taking buses and trains off the road, Philip. We need these at the moment. So what is happening? We're funding from industry, from government, from the farmers themselves to adapt. And that's what I prefer to do. We have a fabulous industry that's providing the tax base for the services of this country as well. You take those out, you take the agri-industry out, you do not have a rural Ireland. And that is the key issue. So we have to support these people to adapt. And the map is there. Carl has outlined the MAC curve. It's not been returned from the market, as Thea has said. So this is a cost-sharing exercise between us all, and we're up for that challenge. Okay.
And Carl Richards, final word to you, and literally just one word. You said that there was one thing that was missing.
I think we need urgency. So the climate, as we can see, is changing, and some of those technologies are available now, and with very little support, like protected urea, with changing what has been sold on the forecourts of our co-ops, we can actually succeed in reducing emissions significantly.
But urgency is the key thing that is missing. Carl Richards, Conor Mulville and Thea Hennessy, thank you all very much. I've got to take a break.
Email countrywide@rte.ie.